The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 377, recorded on February 8th, 2015.
Welcome to the 377th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 210th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and occasionally has other stuff too.
Right. So, four weeks ago, on this podcast, I believe it was episode 374, because we skipped 1 week. We had a guest host, and his name was Andrew Yoon. Last week on January 30th, he drowned while in his Texas vacation, and he was killed. And his funeral was today here in New York. They're also having one in San Francisco. And he was only 29 years old, so it's pretty shocking that he's no longer with us. And he also has a card game coming out called Divorce the Game. It's really good, and everybody who knew Andrew, the word that they always say was that everybody liked him, you know, instantly upon meeting him in person. And you never met him in person, Paul, but...
No, I only ever talked to him the one time, but he struck me as a really great guy. I was really looking forward to him coming back on the show.
And he was going to come back, in a few weeks, but obviously that's not going to happen anymore. So, he was one of the major figures of Joystick, which closed. How someone is when, you know, people register shock from around the industry about it. I mean, he worked for Sony. He worked at Joystick. He worked at various other stuff. And even Kickstarter said that his game seemed like it was going to be the first of many brilliant games to come. And like I said, I played Divorce. I also told him that he should send you a copy of the game. When I can, I'll send you a copy of the game so you can see how good it was, because I play tested it. 29 is way, 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 way too young.
Well, I mean, this is part of why my family has a saying that, you know, you need to tell people how much they mean to you while you still have the chance, because, you know, you never know when the last goodbye is the last one.
So if you want, you can rewind and check out episode 374 to hear Andrew Yoon on the podcast. If you want to hear him, you know, doing the podcast here just for one. He wasn't going to be a regular podcast. He wasn't going to replace Paul. But he was going to be a regular, guest host. And like I said, he had as much... he has as much inside knowledge of the industry as Paul does as a video game maker. So anyways, we're just taking this moment to remember Paul, Andrew Yoon, and, we wish his family the best, our condolences, and we will have a guest host next week.
Ooh.
Yeah. And
well,
he's,
I do wish I had been granted the opportunity to know him better.
Yeah. And, you know, it's shocking because it's such a senseless death, drowning. And also, one of my fears is that kind of death, you know, because we're not going to get into it. It's just a shocking death and unexpected. And, you know, one of the things about Facebook is that, you know, you get to see their, you know, someone's last thoughts, right? And the last post he made was how much he was enjoying the food in Texas.
Aww.
So... you know, I just wanted to bring that up because he was, however briefly, a part of the podcast. So anyways, to more brighter, you know, subjects. What have you been playing lately, Paul?
I've actually returned to Heyday. I don't know if I've mentioned.
You mentioned it last week. Yes.
Oh, yeah. So I introduced somebody to it,
right,
because they asked for a cool game to play. And I just got sucked back in, and I spent an hour this morning. And I really am having, like, withdrawal symptoms right now, not checking on my stupid farm so that I can give my goddamn villagers what they need. It's really frustrating. Like, I completely remember why I stopped playing it in the first place, because it just requires so much damn time.
Well, I mean, I never had a Tamagotchi. I mean...
I mean, you know what? This is like exactly what freaks me out about when people use the term hardcore gamer, like as if there's no such thing as someone who will devote 5 or 6 hours a day.
Well, maybe there's no such thing as a hardcore gamer. Maybe there's such a thing as an obsessive gamer.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, oh, that's not a real game. It's like, yeah, well, I can tell you the exact drop percentages of the stupid screws that I need to, you know, upgrade my barn just to have more inventory capacity. Like, in the same way that you could tell me the refire rate of your, you know, big fucking gun. Like, don't...
You know what?
Don't gamers shouldn't discount each other.
Now I have this image of you in overalls with a farmer hat and a pitchfork looking over your property with a stalk of wheat in your mouth. You know, how they what's it called? They chew on the wheat. You know.
Nah, I'm more of a cowboy. More of a cowboy.
Yes.
I got a whole herd of animals that need a looking after.
Now I have the theme to Brokeback Mountain in my head now.
but yeah, when I went to BronyCon, my cosplay was Big Macintosh, for anybody who knows the show and the character. I'm more of a cowboy.
I don't know anything about I don't know much about My Little Pony.
Oh my God, well, you should totally watch it while it's still on Netflix, because it's only on like for the rest of this week. They extended it after all of my complaining.
Okay, so.
Until the 17th, Gem 2.
Here's the thing is that, but I do know who Applejack is, and I would imagine that you would look more like Applejack if you were a fox.
I'm Applejack's big brother.
Okay. Like I said, I don't know anything about the show, but I do know Applejack because I do know Linkara, right? And they did something called My Little Linkara, in which they used clips from My Little Pony as Linkara speaking. So Linkara speaking, and the character that they made Linkara was Applejack. So I just found it, you know. Anyway, on that note, by the way, I'm still moving forward on doing a show, a video review show, which Paul will probably be a part of because it's a lot more fun than doing a podcast.
Yes, but as discussed, only when I have something interesting to contribute.
Well, the thing is, one thing about the video review show is that I only need like a minute from you. You know, you just tape whatever and I splice it. And, you know, it's not like we have to do a live show or anything like that. So,
am I confusing it with a different project of yours where you were going to have subject matter experts on your different topics?
Well, that's just it.
Okay.
But no, the thing is, you don't have to be a subject. You don't have to be an expert. I mean, you could always have a reaction, you know? I mean,
my reactions are always awesome.
Here's the thing. Let's be honest. Video games, although, you know, you could be the totally hyped fanboy of My Little Pony. And
I am more than just my bronydom.
Here's the thing. It's a funny thing, but one of Nostalgia Critic's episodes had a Ghost Rider pony, right? It was his review of Ghost Rider, and he said, "Well, you know, cohorts said, well, why do you have that on there? It has nothing to do really to do with Ghost Rider." He says, "Well, listen, I there's a secret. Every time you say pony in a YouTube video, the views go up geometrically." And he says, "Watch, pony," and it goes from what 2 million to 50 million views. Pony, 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 pony.
Dude, the brony community is hardcore. You do not want to piss those people off.
I'm not pissing you off. But anyway. Wow.
Saying.
Yes. You know what? That's going to be the name of this podcast. To see how many hits we can get just from people doing a draft, we're going to say Bronies Welcome is going to be the name of this episode. And see.
There you go. I welcome all my fellow Brony brothers and my Pega sisters as well.
Speaking of hits, we're getting a lot more viewership. Even though we didn't get any reader feedback this week, but we're still getting our viewership is increasing, which means, you know, maybe we're starting to catch on. I mean, granted, part of it is because I'm getting more Twitter followers, but...
Dude, I'm huge in China.
There has to be something else there. You know what? I'm going to add the rim shot. Don't worry. Dun, dun.
I need, like, a button where I could press that and make that noise. We got to work on that. We got to upgrade some of this equipment around here. Dun, dun.
I actually have the shocking trumpets blare. Dun, dun,
dun. You know. Oh my God, that's what I did yesterday. I watched The Croods from DreamWorks because it was on Netflix and I needed something to watch while I was making my bed, which is an hour-long process.
Right.
So yeah, like little cave guy, like the hot love interest for the main character girl. He's got this little three-toed sloth that he calls Belt, okay. because it's his belt.
Okay.
And everyone and the running gag is that the little sloth. Da, da, da.
So I think I have more of the, bang, you know, that shocking blare as well. But I have the other one. I also have the Price is Right.
I remember when Rosie O'Donnell had her own talk show back in the day, and she got her very first little soundboard, and she got to fill it with all her custom sounds. And it would go, Tommy, can you hear me? Every time that she mentioned Tom Cruise because she thought he was a cutie patootie.
Well, you know, she's God, I'm old. She's been kicked off The View.
No, she left voluntarily. Yeah,
that's what they say.
On her family. Hey, you know what? I'd believe it because I'd believe it because otherwise there would be, and like she left that show on bad terms once upon a time, and everybody knew it was because like they just couldn't get along. And if this time, like. So if it had been bad, they would have made it, everybody know it was bad. But no, this is to focus on her family.
You know, I'm sort of friends.
And really, who can blame her?
You know, who I'm sort of friends with, who would be an interesting choice to replace her? Roseanne Barr. Or Roseanne, however you want to do it.
Oh, my God. I voted for Roseanne, by the way.
Wrote it for what?
For president.
Oh, okay.
I think she's a brilliant woman. A savvy business person.
She's now more of an elevated Hausfrau. You know, at least not.
Well, I mean, she didn't have any expectations of winning presidency of the United States, but she did it to prove whether or not a private individual without tons and tons of corporate banking could make it, you know, with corporate bankroll and lobbyist support could still make it on the ballot in this country as a viable candidate. And I think she proved her point, and I supported that initiative, and I voted for her.
Yeah. Speaking of video games,
Oh, sorry. Like I said, sometimes we talk about other stuff.
Well, in this case, it might be padding, but, you know. As for me, I finished Grim Fandango, and then I uninstalled it.
Oh!
Oh, yes. I forgot.
I complained about it last week.
Issues with Grim Fandango.
Oh, my God. So to follow up, and
well, you never followed up on this podcast. You never talked about it. You told me, but you didn't tell everybody else.
Oh, okay. So only because you have been talking it up for the last like 4 years, I was very excited to purchase Grim Fandango Remastered, so that I could finally play this game. Because you know, when it was released, I didn't really have intentions on being a video game designer. I just saw creepy Mexican skulls on a box. And
have you ever watched Ugly Betty?
Yes, but I thought Ugly Betty was hysterical.
No, I'm just saying, Ugly Betty's father is the protagonist in Grim Fandango. He plays Manny.
Oh, I didn't know that at the time. I mean, I was like 10, and to a 10-year-old, flowers and skulls on a box just didn't make sense, so I didn't buy it. So anyway, as I was saying, so I was really excited to, you know, to get it from Good Old Games and, you know, and finally see what this fantastic lost game is all about, or at least lost to me. So after trying it on three different computers, apparently none of my machines will run this game. So I'm like, look, I'm a brand new customer to you. Apparently there's no way for me to know whether or not I can play any of you. So they're like, oh, well, so I wrote to them and they're like, oh, well, we're very sorry. Here's, you know, we believe everyone is entitled to make mistakes. Here's your money back as a credit towards your next game purchase. And I'm like, look, I am not a particularly computer savvy person. I had no idea that there was going to be a reason why this wouldn't work on any of my three computers. And there's no guarantee that any of your products will work on my machines. So please give me a refund back to my credit card, and I will be more than happy to return as a customer once I am in a position to upgrade my hardware. And they're like, well, I'm sorry, this is the best we can do. And I'm like, well, I'm sorry, you've just lost a customer. So I will probably, if I could figure out a way to do it, hand that credit back over to you, Jonah. I might just give you my account so you can download a game.
Well, I don't need it. But here's the thing is that my friend...
But, like, I'm so pissed at them. Like, I gave a perfectly reasonable, like, logical argument. I'm freelancing right now. I'm not in a position to go upgrading my computer just to play a $15 game. And, like, really? you guys are going to lose a customer over the fact that you don't want to give them a refund, you're fucked. And now I'm going to point this out on my podcast so that people can think twice before they do business with Good Old Games.
Well, here's the thing.
Just saying.
My friend Jerry, he has Steam, and he has an up-to-date computer, and Grim Fandango Remastered did not work for him. So I'm wondering if it's less the OS issue and maybe something wrong, because also there was an update as well.
Well, no, it was an OS. It was an OS issue on my primary computer, and apparently my graphics cards on my backup computers aren't up to snuff.
That shouldn't be a, you know.
Exactly. And they're like, oh, your drivers are out. Send us all this information. I'm like, okay. And then they're like, oh, your drivers are out of date. I'm like, no, they're not. I just checked them because you told me to. They're fine. There is something wrong with your product. Give me a refund. We can give you a store credit. Well, fuck you.
Well,
fuck
you know what?
The customer is right.
I can always send you my discs of Grim Fandango. And you can install the old version and then use the software that I use to play it. Now, with my story with Grim Fandango is that I do not like the audio changes and some of the tweaks they made. And it isn't really all that remastered. I mean, none of the graphics are improved, you know.
Then why the hell do I need...
No, well, here's the thing. Well, here's the thing is that it comes with director's commentary.
My reactions are fantastic, I gotta say.
It comes with director's commentary, for one. And that was the main thing for me to listen to, because I listened to all the funny stories that Tim and the other technicians had. And you know what? I'm pretty sure that you'd probably appreciate a lot of the commentary because, you know, it's very, you know, like the art director says this and the guy who makes all the models says that. You know, they talk about a lot of the work they did with the artist who they worked for, who they made these screens from. You know, they had an artist come in, do all these fantastic, weird Mayan Day of the Dead Calica shots, you know, and backgrounds and all that stuff, you know. And one of the things you can do, really, if you want, there's a Let's Play of Grim Fandango in which there's no one talking. The game plays and you don't have any commentary. So you can just see, you know, if you just want to see the story and the humor and all that stuff. Unless you actually want to play it and, you know.
Well, I'm a game designer and a lot of what I would be studying this game for would be...
Oh, and then you definitely experience. Want the director's commentary.
That would be experience. It's kind of one of those things that's like you gotta get your hands on it yourself.
Maybe when you get a new laptop or something like that, you know, and what's it called? It'll probably have the stuff to play it. And like I said, Good Old Games. At least you know everything they make is DRM free. And you can download as many times as you want from the site. Oh, the other thing is that, you know, if you go to the Grim Fandango Remastered page on Good Old Games, they're going to have an issues thing, a tab that says issues. And you click on that and you can see what people are having problems with and possible solutions and that sort of thing. So you can always do that too. So, you know, or like I said, you can wait a little longer since you already bought the damn thing and you can just download it whenever you want, since it's Good Old Games.
Maybe I'll play it at a friend's house.
Okay, finishing my story though, that's fine. No. I mean, the diversion was fine. You know,
it was completely relevant.
Yeah. So I finished Grim Fandango Remastered, deleted it off Steam.
Was it as wonderful as you remembered?
Well, I play it all the time. You know, I have – the reason why I got it off Steam was A, there's director's commentary, which I wanted to see. B, I wanted to see what remastered meant. And what remastered meant, I think, was all audio remastering. But the thing is that they made the changes that I do not like. There are some audio things which are humorous. You know, for example, and I'm going to say this completely out of context. You're not going to understand it until you actually play it. But people who have played it will understand what I'm talking about. When you first free Bruno from his mortal coil, there's a little tingly sound. You know, this little, low-pitched, sort of like angelic sound when he comes out. And then he says, hey, nice bathrobe. In Remastered, they remove that, and that ruins one of the later jokes because late in the game... You find him again, and when you open up his coffin, you hear that same, you know, and there's that little callback, which is really, really funny. You know, there's slight little changes. And then when Olivia recites the Grim Fandango poem, they actually go into this sort of Brian De Palma thing in which the camera leaves its position and she's in the dark and it twirls around her while she recites it, which I thought was unnecessary and pretentious. I mean, when she speaks it on stage, you know, the music does the work for her. So, you know, it's sort of like tampering, you know, unnecessary changes like a George Lucas edit to Star Wars. And I have the original version. And, you know, since I have the software to play the original version, but I got the Steam achievements, most of them, and I got to listen to director's commentary. There's no more use for me to use that version of Grim Fandango. And also, you know, even though I wasn't satisfied with Remastered, I also did the $15 as a ballot to saying, look, you know, we want more of this. You know, this is the sort of game I want. So if I give you my $15, that's me telling you, this is the kind of game I like, and I want you to make more of this kind of game.
You know? Exactly, which is why I'm a big fan of not ripping off games.
And, you know, there are, you know, Humble Bundle, you know, does the you pay what you want. And there are some, like World of Goo, they sold their game, and they said, listen, you pay what you want. And they had the suggested price of $5. And a lot of people gave them $10, $15, $20, $25, you know, a lot more than what they were asking for. So you have that, you know, and, you know, some people paid a penny, you know, because they couldn't afford it or whatever. But the number of people who paid a penny, they said, was shockingly low. Most people paid what they suggested, and a lot of them paid more than what they wanted. So there you go. And also, by the way, it was DRM free as well. So people could have technically bought it for nothing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, I mean, people will pay for what they like in the end. Anyway,
I think so, too.
That's our.
I've always said that, though.
Well, that's our little moral of the day. That's our little Aesop, Aesop's tale. You know, people will pay for what they want, and you know they'll pay you more if you like. You know, it's like being in a restaurant. You know, you do give tips. When I like something, I give a 33% tip, which you know is extraordinarily high because people say 15. What is it? 18% now or 17%? 15% tip.
Double the tax.
Yeah, well, I usually give 30 to 33% if I, you know, if I liked it. So, which is, you know, which is often the case at Hooters. I mean, you know, the girls are really nice there. No, I'm semi-kidding. I don't go to Hooters that much. But when I do, you know, I always enjoy it because one of the things that they stress there is that waitresses have to be ultra nice and ultra helpful. You know, I mean, yeah, right. They're eye candy, but, you know, more than that, you know, they're really, really friendly. So I like tipping them for that. Anyways, we're going to move on to next.
I'd like to point out that we've gone from bronies to Hooters, and we've not yet hit the news.
Right. So the first news.
I enjoy us. We're fun.
Yeah, we're going to start the news now, and I'm going to do this one so that Paul can slowly get angry and angrier, because when I first showed him this news item.
Oh, my God. I was livid.
But
I still am.
This does have a sort of happy ending, so.
Well, you're going to have to convince me, but I'll happily read along.
Okay. League of Legends tourney places limit on LGBT players, and this comes to us from PC Gamer. Although, actually, the only reason I'm using PC Gamer is because they flesh out because I just can't really post, you know, the actual URL of the message itself, because that's not news, that's just the message. So I wanted to get someone else that you could just click on the news and get a little bit of the thing. Anyway, Garena Esports issued new rules for the second segment of its quote-unquote all-feminine Iron Solari tournament, which it will now run on a monthly basis, which is, by the way, League of Legends. It is said that after discussions with various parties, including members of teams who played in the first Iron Solari tournament, as well as legal legend players belonging to the lesbian, gay, transgendered women community, it is decided to place limits on the number of LGBT players who can take part. Quote, each team will have a maximum of one gay, transgendered woman for the entirety of the tournament day. Therefore, teams cannot do the following. Team A's team will be four female players and one gay, and then on Team A's second game, they'll have four female players and blah, 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 all these ridiculous rules. If anybody who violates it will have a one-year ban. Strangely, Garena said it had imposed the new rules to help ensure, quote, a more inclusive environment where no one feels left out, but also claiming an obligation to ensure a level playing field for all, adding, quote, there are arguments and concerns from the other level to ensure a level playing field after all, adding, I'm sorry, there are arguments and concerns from other participants who disputes that lesbian, gay, transgender women players may probably have some unfair advantage. Riot Games, by the way, who developed League of Legends, posted on Twitter, LGBT players are welcome at official League of Legends tourneys. We're working with partners to ensure consistency with our values across all regions. It comes as no surprise that Garena later posted, our initial ruling on LGBT player restrictions within the Iron Solari League has created a lot of good discussion and debate over the past 24 hours. After discussing the ruling with our partners and re-examining our approach, and I'm gonna interpret that to mean Riot Games threatened them. You know,
I'm going to interpret that as somebody showed them what percentage of their population may possibly be non-exclusively heterosexual.
This means that any player who self-identifies as female will be allowed to participate. We sincerely apologize for any offense we caused to LGBT player and gaming communities. Our original intent when we put together this tournament was to promote diversity in a competitive gaming community. Hence, we are grateful to players who have consistently provided feedback to help us learn and improve as we strive to develop an inclusive gaming environment for all. We'll also be keeping our promise of having an open dialogue with all parties as we plan this in future events. We hope you'll tune in to support these awesome teams and players in the upcoming tournament. Okay, Paul, you can vent, and then I have some things that are kind of weird about this. Go ahead.
What the fuck were these people thinking? I mean, honestly, we're only allowed to have one lesbian or transgender individual on your team. Like, why?
Yeah, here's the thing.
I don't, like, somebody please explain the logic of this to me. Please.
Now, here's the thing. In the Olympics, it is an issue to have a transgendered woman playing in a physical sport because biology, you know. They may have transgendered a woman, but they still have male musculature and a skeleton and all that. So they're
right. And you know what? Quite frankly, I would not want to be the one to make that decision when it comes to physical sports.
Right. But this, I don't see where being transgendered for one or being a lesbian for the other, because this is all female groups. So for somehow a lesbian, I'm not even thinking about transgendered right now, but a lesbian somehow has an advantage. Where?
That makes no sense. Why? Because she doesn't have a husband to cook for, you fucking sexist bastard.
And then transgendered, and I don't see, you know, here's the thing, is that I think that women have more of a spatial relationship. You know, they have better, what's the word I'm looking for? Puzzle solving abilities, and there's a technical term for it, right? They have,
well,
what's it called? I mean, you know, how would a transgendered woman have any advantage as well?
Okay, just getting into the biology of the way the human mind works is that historically women have in games been better at selecting out between numerous objects in a crowded field, which is theoretically the reason why
League of Legends, right. Which is a MOBA.
Right. Well, I'm just pointing out a little bit of theory here. So that's, you know, traditionally the reason why women are better at hidden object games, like Gardens of Time from Playdom. And men excel at, you know, picking out movement from an empty field. And this just goes back to our whole hunter-gatherer dynamic and the way our society evolved. Right. So I could kind of maybe even understand thinking...
but it's reverse though. If they were born male, then they would have a disadvantage in that case.
Now, right.
Here's the thing.
No, but it might be a diverse skill set to the team as a whole. Like, so I can kind of almost sort of maybe put a net around this globulous like crap thinking, so that at least I can understand it. But come on, you guys are overthinking your tournament.
And, you know, I'm trying to figure out where I know Garena is not – it's a foreign country, and I'm trying to remember where they actually are, where they're based out of. No, they're based out of the U.S., which is weird. Okay. So the thing I'm wondering is, okay, so you have that. Then you have, okay, why only one? This isn't like – now, here's the thing. In soccer,
like, what business is it of theirs?
Okay, here's the thing.
Who anybody sleeps with if they want to play your game?
In softball, you know. I know that in the gay softball leagues, and I know this from my gay friends, they're allowed to have like two hetero people, you know. But that's because, you know, they're trying to, you know, they don't want, you know, it's supposed to be a gay league. But I'm trying to figure out why only one, you know. Is two going to break it? Is three? And here's the thing is that we're not talking about men who are going to put on a wig, you know, and a dress, you know, we're talking about people who, you know, in terms of the transgender, who identify as female, you know, they're not guys hopping on just for a larf, you know, just, I'm going to play with the women. No, 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 no. These are people who identify as female, you know, who may or may not be getting, you know, sexual reassignment surgery, right? So I still, I, you know, is it that this is the only thing I can come up with is that they're worried about offending the other teams. And that is just plain ridiculous. That's the only thing I can think of is they're worried about offending opposing teams, you know, opposing teams being offended by this. And you know what? Grow up.
Well, you know, and I have tangential experience with a group that I belong to in Los Angeles. You know, I was invited to join a group for gay board gamers in West Hollywood, and their entire, like, it says right on their webpage that it's like, you don't have to be gay to be a member. You just have to be gay friendly.
They
just have to not be bothered by it if people come with their boyfriends.
There are, there used to be LGBT, another letter, not straight, but, you know, but the LGBT Alliance or something like
that. Oh, LGBTA, allies.
Right. No, it wasn't that, but, you know, but it was basically gay, lesbian,
ally, supporters, friends,
straight, and what's it called, you know, and everything in between, right?
Is PFLAG still a thing?
Yes, it is. Parents of gay and lesbian children, yes.
Okay.
Yes, they're still around. Why?
No, I was just curious. I mean, I haven't heard about them since I was in high school.
So it may not be obvious to people listening to this podcast, but this is a gay-friendly podcast.
Oh, yeah, we are gay-friendly on this podcast.
Yes. So, but we have to shout out to Riot, who immediately made that Twitter post, right? They what's it called? Like, it was like maybe 1 or 2 hours after that post was up. And they immediately said, okay, here's the deal. This is our game, and we're open to everybody, and we're going to deal with this. And apparently they dealt with it.
Because yeah, and you know,
after that, Karina said, oh, you know what? We made a mistake.
And you know what? This is one of those things that is making me want to back Riot on everything. Because I don't know if anybody else has heard of this, but Brandon Beck gave a talk recently about how the games industry as a whole is not investing enough in its people. So they're speaking out about LGBT issues. They're speaking out about the way that people who make games are treated by gaming companies. You know, I kind of want to throw my support behind them as a company, because quite frankly, if you're going to do something positive, I'm going to support you.
Oh, they've always been about the fans. You know, they throw kick-ass parties at E3 and PAX, you know. I don't know if you knew this. And they're not like other parties. They're just open for everybody, and you get free bar food. So you can chow down on you know, sliders and wings and fries and soda, you know, on their dime, you know.
Yeah, but see, I never eat at those things.
Well, here's the thing. You don't have to eat.
Because you can't talk with your mouth full.
Well, that's just it. You don't have to eat. You can just chat, you know. And the people of Riot are there with their Riot t-shirts, you know, and it's really a good time for everybody, you know. So if there's a Riot party at E3, I'll let you know, Paul, and you can you know, talk to them and say thank you.
Woohoo, E3. God, how far away is that?
What do you mean, how far away is... Oh,
like
E3 is in
months.
June.
Jesus. Yeah, yeah, it's like only 4 months away.
A little update, by the way. I am going to be attending at E3, and I have my... I do have my hotel and my plane and everything like that.
Lovely.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to move on to the next news item, and this one is actually kind of shocking as well, although not shocking in the bad way as the other news item. Go ahead, Paul.
Sony Online Entertainment acquired becomes Daybreak Game Company, and this comes to us from Games Industry Biz. Sony Online Entertainment is to become Daybreak Game Company and turn its focus to multi-platform gaming. The company has been acquired by Columbus Nova and is now an indie studio. Quote, today we are pleased to announce that we have been acquired by Columbus Nova, an investment management firm well known for its success with its existing portfolio of technology, media, and entertainment-focused companies. This means that, effective immediately, Sony Online Entertainment will operate as an independent game development studio where we will continue to focus on creating exceptional online games for players around the world, and now as a multi-platform gaming company. Yes, that means PlayStation and Xbox Mobile and more. As part of the transition, Sony Online Entertainment will now become Daybreak Game Company. This name embodies who we are as an organization and is a nod to the passion and dedication of our employees and players. It is also representative of our vision to approach each new day as an opportunity to move gaming forward. Columbus Nova is a New York investment firm that was founded in 2000. Its CEO is Andrew
Intrator,
a former energy, base metals, and mining executive. And the company currently manages around $15 billion in assets. Wedbush Securities, Michael Patcher, commented...
Don't mispronounce it. He's a friend of the podcast.
Michael, what did I say?
You said Patcher.
Okay. So you're going to make fun of my extremely mild dyslexia because I got the T and the H confused.
Come on, it's Michael Pachter. We've talked about it millions of times, though.
Yes, but I'm reading while I speak. Everybody knows I do a cold read on this podcast.
Okay, go ahead. Well, so do I. Michael, whatever.
Commented, I think that Sony Online is profitable, but not particularly strategic for Sony. Remember, they are a consumer electronics manufacturer, so to some extent, owning movie and television studios makes more sense in order to drive Blu-ray player and TV sales. However, owning an online gaming company isn't a great fit, particularly as games are shifting increasingly to free-to-play mobile model. Sony Online Entertainment published such titles as the EverQuest series, PlanetSide 2, and DC Universe Online.
Hold on. Now, one thing I have to question is, Michael Pachter just said that Sony is a consumer electronics manufacturer, so they care more about TVs and movies to drive Blu-ray and TV sales?
I think what he's saying is that it makes more sense for them to put their game efforts into the console market so that they can continue to push sales of the PlayStation.
No, sales are supposed to be driving Blu-ray and TV sales.
But their focus, he's saying, is on hardware, not software.
Yeah, I don't know. I think this seems like a mistake from Sony. I mean, the thing is, a lot of people love PlanetSide 2 and DC Universe Online. If it's accessible to people playing now, here's the question: I wonder if it'll be cross-platform, in which people on the Xbox One can play with people from the PlayStation 4 and with DC Universe Online as well. That'll be interesting to see.
I don't know. I think it just sounds like a number of the larger companies, the larger entertainment conglomerates, are kind of, pulling back their bets from the game space.
By the way, do you know who else Columbus Nova owns? They own Harmonix, which is coming up, which is releasing a new Rock Band game, Rock Band 4, I think next year. And I'm wondering, wouldn't it be nice to have some sort of Rock Band MMO somehow?
Oh my God, I could picture it. It'll be like Gem and the Holograms Online. You come across your rival band and play off with them on the streets.
I think I just made Paul orgasm there.
Oh my God.
Anyway, it'll be interesting to see because I want.
Oh! All they need to do is pair that with the City of Heroes Avatar customizing engine.
Okay.
Yes, big hair and capes. It'll be awesome.
City of Heroes was NCSoft. It was not.
I know. All they need to do is acquire that. It'll be the perfect game.
I don't think NCSoft wants to help SOE or Daybreak or whatever they are now.
They'll help whoever gives them money.
I guess.
Let's just be upfront.
Now, here's the other thing that interests me, and that people went, when they said it, in that PlayStation, Xbox, and mobile as well. And we're talking about mobile MMOs here. Is that what we're talking about? Or are we talking about just regular free-to-play mobile games? But it's just interesting that, mobile is getting more and more of a chunk of the industry now. And
well, let's take a minute to examine what we mean by MMO. I mean, what my recent reintroduction to Heyday has taught me is all of the new social features. So just because I don't have a particular avatar that runs around in that world, I'm still connecting with people on a community. I'm still visiting other people's farms to get the things that I need.
You can have mobile apps that interact with an MMO, right? But I'm just thinking, what about an MMO can be played on a mobile, right? That can be directly, a mobile MMO,
As a designer, I think it's a really interesting challenge, and I think that we can really start to redefine what we mean by MMO.
But here's you could actually do it if you had, say, a top-down Zelda-like gameplay for an MMO, right? You know, it's top down. It's not technically sophisticated, but it's sophisticated in other ways, you know, so you're exploring a world from above, you know, that sort of thing. Something that mobiles are able to handle easily. And one thing about mobiles that they have over, you know, consoles is that they're born to be online, you know? That's their entire deal, is that they're online, you know? That's
right. I mean, I think we just kind of have to accept that MMO means more than Warcraft.
Yeah. Yeah, or World of Warcraft.
Well, yeah.
Warcraft is the RTS, and I know you're...
I get it. I know.
I ask a question. Are you still really champing at the bit for Warcraft 4?
Oh, my God. I would buy Warcraft 4 in a hot New York minute.
Just
you have no idea. I loved the Warcraft franchise and played everything up until they came out with WoW, because I just don't really enjoy playing with other people.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that I think... Did World of Warcraft 3 come before or after WoW? I think it came just before. Yeah, and they had the expansion. I think it was the Frozen Throne.
Yes.
Okay, so...
And that was all the narrative that led up to WoW, by the way.
Hmm.
So that was like the journey of the human prince who became the Ice Wrath Lord or whatever.
The Wraith Lord.
Yeah, I mean, so, like, you played as him as he went through this fantastic story arc, and then WoW came out, and it was like, oh, that's awesome, but it's like, oh, I have to,
you know,
I have to rely on other people to not be jerks to me.
The funny thing is, Paul, I never really pegged you as an RTS fan. Are you just a fan of that particular RTS?
No, I also loved Heroes of Might and Magic.
That's not an RTS. That's a turn-based game.
Well, yeah.
Okay, but
they're in that same realm of strategy. So if you do it well, you know, if you make any game well, I'm going to enjoy it.
You know,
I might not be quite as quick to love shooters, but I still love the original BioShock. I mean, that was freaking brilliant. Like, I would give my left arm to have been part of that team.
You know, the thing is that I have Heroes of Might and Magic 6 on my hard drive, but I haven't really played it that much. I don't know. I haven't played
anything since Heroes 5. I feel like I should go back.
A little bit of 5, but it was, you know, it didn't come with an editor. And that was my entire deal, by the way, with Heroes of Might and Magic, was that it came 4, 3, and 2 had a great editor, and I would make maps. And I think I said this, like, years ago on this podcast, that I actually have my Heroes of Might and Magic 2 maps floating around as part of an expansion pack in Slavic countries, you know, in Eastern Europe and Russia.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
an official part of a pack. So it's sort of like that's my computer game fame as a designer in Eastern Europe and Russia, you know?
And here's what I kind of don't like about editors, just as, you know, from my design perspective. It's like, fantastic. I love that there are tool sets out there for people to use. I personally don't like using them because I would rather design a new feature. It's like, I feel really limited, especially like, I love Disney's Infinity, but I really don't want to make my own toy box because you can only do X, Y, or Z thing in them. And I you know, I'm a high-level designer.
By the way, as a minor news item, it was announced that there were going to be gold and silver Mario's amiibos.
That's kind of awesome. Coming up. I wish I had any reason to jump into the amiibo. I wish I had a reason to jump into the amiibo, but I don't play Smash Brothers, and I don't particularly like Mario Kart.
Mm.
And those are like the only two games that they work with.
I wonder if, do they have the rares with like they do with Skylanders has rares, right? Silver and gold, you know, that you can, you know, sort of like collector, you know, oh, I got one, you know, you don't know that it is a deal. Do they have that with Disney's Infinity?
Yeah, they do. They have transparent figures.
Oh, okay.
That are like a crystal version, and then their counterpart in the game is also transparent. But what I would want to see from Nintendo and Amiibo is I want a freaking RPG where you can customize your entire party using your Amiibo figures.
Yeah.
So it's like you get to bring three, you know, you get to switch them up, but you got to have your Amiibos, and that's when I would get into it.
You know what I was thinking, though, by the way? You know who would really love this is, quote-unquote, hardcore gamers for a game, for an RPG.
Oh, my God. Are we going to start with this word again?
Well, I'm going to say, can you imagine if you had this sort of, you know, this statuette version for something like Mass Effect, you know, or Halo? You know, could you imagine if you did head to Halo, and if you say had one of the grunts, you know, the little guys, if you had that, you could play as a grunt, and the to play through the campaign as a grunt, and the characters all change their dialogue to deal with the fact that they have one of those little grunts in place of Master Chief running around. I mean, that would be a killer idea, don't you think? Just, it would change the entire campaign just based on it. And you know that, you know, quote unquote hardcore gamers also collect figurines. They just don't call them dolls. They call them statues or figurines.
Oh my God, don't ever call an action figure a doll, even though it totally is.
It's a doll.
I will cut you. Don't ever call my action figures dolls, even though they totally are, or I will cut you.
Well, let me ask you a question. Are the My Little Pony plushies, are they dolls or are they action figures?
They're plushies.
Okay. Or how about, never mind. We're not going to get into this because I can just sense Paul's ire starting to rise in his belly.
I will end you.
Okay, we're going to move on to the next item, and this one will probably make Paul happy.
Aww, I like it when Paul's happy.
Nintendo wants to make a comeback with cheaper software, and this comes to us from Polygon.
Woohoo!
Nintendo is aiming to stimulate sales by introducing more low-cost software, the company president Satoru Iwata confirmed to Nikkei. By the way, Nikkei is the major newspaper in Japan. It's like the New York Times.
So it's like the New York Times.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Because, you know, when you ever have major news coming out of Japan, it's like Nikkei News, you know, sort of like UPI. The games company plans to release remakes of older titles for the 3DS system, as well as releases previously seen on smartphone devices. The plan is to offer content at prices just as low as just a few hundred yen, according to Iwata, which I think would mean like $10 or $20, right? Free trials will also see an increase, with hopes to boost the name recognition of games and increase the likelihood of gamers purchasing the release in full. Demos, remember those?
I remember those.
We aim to return to profit levels of more typical of the company in the year ending March 2017, with suggestions that shareholders should anticipate seeing profit around 100 billion yen, which is $145 million.
Basically, they're saying now is the time to buy.
Yeah. Despite this, Nintendo will not be cutting game system prices, Iwata continued. So don't expect price. Although, you know what? Okay. By 2017, I'm pretty sure the Wii U and 3DS prices will go down anyway.
By 2017, I'm expecting to have
the Wii U
announced. I'm expecting to have announced news by 2017 of the next console.
Right, and the next is just a bunch of sales figures. The thing that you might think is that after dismal sales of the Wii U forced the company to slash its yearly forecast. It had an operating loss of just $15 million in the nine-month period. So okay. Here's the thing is that, you know, have you noticed that the more expensive the device, the cheaper the software is? Like, you get a PC or an iPad, you know, the games tend to be under $15, you know. Not the AAA games, you know. And on the iPad and iPhone, you'll see $99 and $2 games, while on consoles, you know, $50, $60, right? So, I mean, here's the thing, you know, it isn't the cost of the system that will kill people. It's the cost of the
software. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, while I have absolutely no reason to upgrade my iPhone every year just because they've come out with new hardware.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that there are so many gaming options out there, like there's always something that I haven't heard of. Like, have you played Five Nights at Freddy's?
I've heard of it.
Oh my God, it's awesome. It's awesome. I'm not allowed to play it anymore, apparently, because what? I scared the crap out of a room full of people.
What?
Okay, so Five Nights at Freddy's, if you haven't played it, you totally should. It is a fantastically inventive little game. It's totally worth the $3 from iTunes.
Oh dear, like someone at a grindhouse theater screaming at the screen telling the woman...
No. It's you play the part of a security guard. Type establishment, and you play the part of a night security guard, and you're told, "Oh, by the way, the big secret is that these things are all alive."
Tronics one, yes.
Right, and you know they think that you're just an animatronic head, and they'll rip your head off if they see you. So stay in the security office and keep your eyes on the security cameras. And if they come near the office, make sure you close the doors.
They only advance when you're not looking at them.
Right. They only advance when you're not looking at them. So it's like, you know, you got to find three and four of them at a time. And It really is a nifty, nifty little mechanic.
It's a horror puzzle.
But like, I had no idea what was going on. And so it was like, I had miraculously stumbled my way past day one. And on day two, one of the robots came into the security office and scared the crap out of me. I screamed so loud that I scared an entire room full of people.
Well, this sounds like Rescue on Fractalus a little bit.
Oh my god, I've been told I'm not allowed to play it anymore because I was just playing it out of nowhere. I think I had the sound down. So I didn't really hear the instructions from the answering machine. Because that's one of the things that I like about it, is that there isn't a whole lot of, like, tutorials on the interface. It's just kind of like, listen to the narrative message and kind of figure it out.
So here's the thing is that...
The fantastic thing is that with software prices being low, I'm able to take a chance on something new. Companies are able to take a chance on a new mechanic. We are able to expand what we currently think of as... a relevant gaming mechanic, because all you do in this game is switch between the security cameras and close the door at the right time. You don't move.
Yeah. I'm thinking about taking a chance on Darkest Dungeon.
That sounds interesting.
It's an RPG, but an interesting one in which not only is it incredibly hard, it's sort of like you take control of a party and, you have a bunch of people. So you pick which four are going in, and they all have personalities and faults and all that stuff. Like, they get stressed out when they're going on after a mission. So some of them need to go to the bar and get drunk. Some of them need to go to a prostitute. Some of them need to, do all these other things. They have traits like masochistic or sadistic or.
And what is this on?
This is on PC. This is PC Steam.
It's on Steam, right?
Yeah,
right, I think you might have just sold me on making a game purchase.
Right, it's $20. It's quote-unquote early access, but from what I understand, it's feature complete. So okay. What happens is that it's a full game. I don't know. It's like late beta, right? But people are raving about it. And it also has a unique art style. It's sort of like gothic anime that is sort of monochromatic. So it has that really raw feel to it. You look at it. It's incredibly hard. And one of the things that people try to do is like it's anti-grinding in this way. They will refuse to fight something that's beneath them, that has a lower level. So you can't grind and jump on them on lower level creatures. No. You have to fight things your own level. So
I've always loved the way that Earthbound dealt with that.
Yeah. So, like I said, you have to – a lot of the game is not only delving into dungeons, right? It's not like Diablo. It's not one of those loot things where you have to get artifacts, and they're really special, but there are fewer of them, and they do have a rarity. But like I said, it's all about keeping your party happy, sort of like a little bit of Sims in it, right? So – that's why I'm interested in, because it has this meta gaming part of it in which you're trying to keep your people happy so that they'll go down and do things for you. And sometimes they'll acquire negative traits. Like the person who can only relax by drinking, there's a chance they might get an alcoholic trait.
Well, there you go.
But I'm just saying it's getting rave reviews. It's getting a lot of really good buzz. So it's one of the few early access games that I'm actually thinking about picking up. The other one I picked up was Sir, You Are Being Hunted, which is basically a survival game in which your robots are hunting you, right? And you have to – but this game is – it's really, really unique looking, and it has – it's not a unique mechanic because there are other games that are sort of like – it's basically a roguelike with a lot of personality to it. So, for those of you out there, Steam, $20. I'm willing to give it a chance. It was actually a Kickstarter game that – that's why it's on Steam right now.
And just for those listeners who may not know where Steam is, what is that website?
Actually, it's steampowered.com.
www.steampowered.com.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
EA exec, our games are actually still too hard to learn. And this comes to us from VG247. During a multiple developer interview on stage at DICE 2015 this week, Hailman said he feels modern games take the average player too long to learn, what with the various controls and button maps. quote, our games are actually still too hard to learn, he said. The average player probably spends 2 hours to learn how to play the most basic game. Asking for 2 hours of somebody's time, most of our customers, between their normal family lives, to find 2 continuous hours to concentrate on learning how to play a video game is a big ask. Hailman was responding to comedian Pete Holmes, who said during the talk he'd like controller layouts and button maps to stay the same across franchises and games in the same series.
You know, there's one word I would like to say in response to this. Manuals. Remember when we had manuals in which you could read how to play before you actually played the game? You know,
no one's going to read a manual anymore.
That's not true. You know, because you can read a manual anytime you like. And as a matter of fact, you know, I would always read the manual after I bought the game while I was going home. And it would sort of get my juices flowing reading about how the game is played and all that stuff before I actually got home. You know, manuals. Forget, you know, in-game tutorials are fine. But sometimes I think they're often a weakness. And you know what really burns me? There are some games in which they tell you, okay, go to YouTube and see how to do this. Because we didn't take the time to teach you how to do that.
Well, see, that's, I mean, so 2 parts to this answer is, yeah, it's no longer economically profitable for the company to spend resources making a manual. A, no one's going to read it. B, those people who do read it could go look it up online.
Well, what about this? What if they had this thing in which you could pay them $5 to send you what do they call them again?
Yeah, that's called a strategy guide, and it's $30.
No. $5 for a manual. Not a strategy guide, but what do they call the circle-ringed ones? Ring-bound?
Ring-bound.
Ring-binding? You know, they're cheap to make, you know, and I don't have to print out 100 pages? Come on.
Well, it's not economically feasible. And my second point is that the solution to this is not having to go read it or having an awful tutorial that makes the game come to a grinding halt. It's intuitive game design. And the comedian is kind of right. If you've taught your player that, you know, X is fire and A is jump, then you should keep that control across the entire franchise, unless you have a damn good reason for changing it, like the shape of the controller. Like, the controller has changed because you're on a new console.
Screw that. I want a manual. Anyways.
Well, you're a dinosaur.
We're going to move on to the next item because we're running out of time here.
Oh, okay.
Radio Shack goes bankrupt, and this comes from GameSpot. Even Radio Shack was making fun of how outdated Radio Shack was before the electronics store filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy earlier this week. However, the stores won't disappear entirely. The company is just no longer independently owned. Radio Shack operated 4,000 stores in the U.S., according to GameSpot's sister CNET, General Wireless, a unit of investing from Standard General, will buy between 1,500 to 2,400 of these stores. Wireless service control provider Sprint said it would make a deal with General Wireless to create 1,750 stores that will send a combination of Sprint products and services and Radio Shack goods. Like another big electronics store franchise, Circuit City, which tried to rebrand itself as The City before it went bankrupt in 2009, Radio Shack previously tried to rebrand itself as The Shack. It also reconfigured its stores, and you can see in the commercial above, forget that part because we can't show you. It kept losing ground to online retailers like Amazon and big box stores. Radio Shack was founded in 1921, and over its lifetime, sold electronics, tools for hobbyists, RC cars, and even games and consoles. You know,
wow.
I think it was around almost before Jordan was around, wasn't it?
Probably.
Yeah, so 1921, wow. Here's the thing is that, you know, us here in the East Coast, we do not have a Fry's Electronics. So,
that's true.
You know,
I mean, there's got to be somewhere to go to just pick up that little, I don't know, computer
diodes and wires and all that stuff. You know, we do not have those parts in other stores. You know,
right.
Radio Shack is.
I mean, there's.
Yeah.
I mean, there kind of has to be like the nerd store in every city, like that. I just wouldn't understand.
Well, not even the nerd store.
Because I went
store.
To Fry's, by the way.
I mean, like the technician store, right? It doesn't have to be a nerd. You know, like and also music. I mean, they have a lot of amps and wires and all that stuff that other stores simply do not sell or you cannot find.
Right.
The problem with Radio Shack is they've always been hideously overpriced on the stuff that shouldn't be that overpriced. You know, like speakers, headphones, that sort of stuff. So, which is why this is happening, you know. So it's sad. You know, Radio Shack is, you know, I mean, everybody says, let's go to Radio Schlock. You know, it's just the way it is. You know, it's like a part of your life, really, especially if you're a gamer, you know. So, I mean, they also have those, I don't know, like I said, Radio Shack is just, you know, something that's always been around for me. So I'd be sad if it went away, but apparently it's just going to be bought by someone else. Although I will say this, it's usually this could be a precedent to them closing up shop like Circuit City did, you know.
I definitely think that Radio Shack's days are probably numbered. You've kind of got it right in that. I think the future of big box stores in general is, you know, kind of gonna fold in the next 20 to 30 years. Malls are closing across the country, Jonah. Even stores like JCPenney's and Macy's can barely keep all these other little locations in a mall filled.
Well, Best Buy is surviving by simply having also their online front be a lot like Amazon, right? And they have the same price slashes that Amazon does. So they're coping in with just by emulating, but also saying, hey, guess what? Not only can you shop online with us, but you can actually go to our store and actually touch the products, you know? That's something Amazon can't do. You can't go to Amazon and actually physically handle the products if you want to buy them, you know?
I definitely think that what they're probably going to need to do is focus on making their locations much friendlier to web ordering and pickup. And it's probably going to become a lot closer to like the original Netflix distribution model. I mean, you've got stuff all over the country. You put it in on the computer, you know, kind of like Amazon's doing.
Well, the thing is that's the way things are now. You know, people go online to shop. Right. I mean, they still go to stores, you know, which is why Walmart is still surviving really well because they have a strong online presence. You know, Kmart is surviving because they're cheap and they also have a strong online presence. And Radio Shack, you never think of them having a website, do you? That's their problem. You don't think of a Radio Shack website.
Right. Well, because they're smaller. They're more specialized.
Well, they're 4,000 stores. I really can't say that they're smaller.
No, I mean, each physical location is smaller. Radio Shack is not a big box store.
But you see, Complete Strategist, I think there's only one Complete Strategist. And it survived by having its own, you know, online. Well, they've always been mail order to begin with. So going online was no big deal for them. But they survived by having online stuff. And also, the other thing that they do, which Radio Shack could do as well, is that Radio Shack has one advantage, at least not over Electronics Fry, but over other things, is that they have everything that you'd need, you know, as a hobbyist, right?
Oh my God, I was taken to a Fry's once by a friend who was working on my computer to make it last a little.
Fry's
longer.
Is like Radio Shack on steroids.
Oh my God, it was insane.
But you know, what I like about Electronic Fry's, when I went there in San Jose, was, you know, you know what I went there for? I went there to see what was there for $5 and under, and they had a lot of great stuff for $5 and under, like Bluetooth speakers. I picked up some $5 Bluetooth speakers. I picked up this and that. I would have picked up something for you that was Frozen related, but you already had it. Although, you know, they also had the Frozen karaoke machine.
What do I have that's Frozen?
Frozen the movie. CD? No,
just, I have the Blu-ray and the CD.
Yeah, that's just my selling general, it for five.
That's
bucks
just my.
There.
Yeah, but that's just my general Disney compulsion.
I mean, they had DVDs there for.
I mean,
months.
I have all of them.
Yeah. So, like
I've,
I said,
yes, I've seen Dinosaur. I'm sad to admit.
I actually had Dinosaur and I traded it in because I couldn't stand the movie, but I still have the soundtrack to Dinosaur because it's fantastic.
I got it for free on DisneyMovieRewards.com because it was like if you put in any code over the next 3 months. We'll send you either Tinkerbell the movie number 4, which I already had, or Dinosaur.
Well, that sort of tells you where Dinosaur is on their level of stuff. It's the equivalent of Tinkerbell number 4. So, but like I said, I didn't like Dinosaur the movie. I watched enough times that, you know, this doesn't get it. But I did love the soundtrack. And that was the only reason why I would watch Dinosaur in the first place, was that sound.
Well, Dinosaur was another one of those movies that made a drastic change last minute.
The entire thing, because Michael Eisner wanted them to talk.
Right. The entire movie was supposed to be silent. And you know, chief creative at Disney was just like, no, this is stupid. Make them talk. No one's going to sit through 2 hours of silence.
No,
I think it was around the same time that Tom Hanks spent, you know, 30 silent minutes on film in Castaway, and like that was a lot for people.
Yeah, but
I think it was just like, you know, that's kind of a point that somebody should have brought up earlier in the development
and
process.
Castaway
and the film
won,
probably should have been canceled
and
before.
But Tom Hanks also won the Oscar, so
right.
There you
but
go.
But it was a difficult movie for people to sit
but it's,
and watch
well,
because
it's,
of that half hour.
Because
silence.
It's Robinson Crusoe, and he has to go through a lot of crap.
But in the same way that the opening sequence of Saving Private Ryan is deliberately difficult to watch, it, like, these things are done for a reason.
Here's the thing. The opening scene of Dinosaur does not have one drop of dialogue in it, and, you know, it was wonderful.
Yeah, but they're doing an experiment for a children's movie.
Yeah, but you know what? Children like dinosaurs. They don't have to have them speak. They just like them, you know? Anyways.
You're making a blanket assumption.
Well, of course I am. We're going to move on to the question of the week. Ready?
Okay.
What video game do you still get emotional about? You can answer first, Paul. And emotional, by the way, obviously means any range of emotions. Or, if you want, video games that give you every range of emotion when you're playing.
Oh dear God.
I have a feeling you're going to go to one of the Final Fantasy games.
Oh, my. No, I'm just my answers are all fighting each other to get out all at once. Okay. I might have like 9 answers. Okay. You know, the original Zelda makes me feel safe and comfortable because I have such positive memories from playing it in my childhood.
Okay.
The original Kingdom Hearts made me cry the first time I could actually fly with Peter Pan. you know,
that was one. By the way,
Final Fantasy X-2. When I hear that song come on my MP3 player, I feel like I'm, you know, walking the runway.
By the way,
I mean, emotional reactions are what game designers are paid to create.
That reminds me of they had this I don't know if it's a trailer, but it was sort of like a video which was a presentation of King's Quest V, right?
Uh-huh.
And the question they asked at the very beginning, can a video game make you cry? And then they play that scene in the very beginning when the princess, I forget her name, when the king dies and she has to deal with it, you know, and people found that very, very, you know, they cried at that. So that just reminds me of when you're saying that made me cry. So they had that little, I'm not saying it can't be a commercial. It's something else. It's like a featurette.
Oh, and Final Fantasy VII, the deliberate manipulation of Aeris' death.
Okay.
I mean, who doesn't get emotional thinking about that?
I don't because I haven't played it, so.
Well, you have no soul in your game.
Well,
you're not a real gamer.
What?
You're not a real hardcore gamer.
Uh-huh.
What's wrong with you?
For me, the answer is very simple. The Mass Effect trilogy. All three games. And the thing is that, you know, by default, when you follow a character that you created, by the way, you know, that you created is sort of like a personification of you, you know, from beginning to end, you know, and a spoiler, Commander Shepard in almost every ending dies at the end, you know, and also in Mass Effect 3, all of his friends die. And you know what? Since you've played the game that long and the writing is that good, everything is earned in it, you know, all the fun moments, all the funny moments, all the sad moments, all the, you know, outrage. Most, you know, when writing is good, it earns that emotion, right? So that's why, you know, Mass Effect 3, and I cannot listen to Liara's Vigil, which is a music piece, you know, without getting misty, because, you know, it reminds me of all the time that I've played that game over and over and over again with different things, you know, but still, my shepherd is blonde and green-eyed, you know, so.
Oh, and hearing One Winged Angel, you know, just the song itself, I mean, just reminds me of the impossible feat it was to beat Sephiroth, not only in Final Fantasy VII, but as a side cameo in Kingdom Hearts 2. I mean, that was impossible. It causes dread. Like, that song from that experience causes dread.
So,
and in Final Fantasy VII, when we had to betray our own summoned creatures just to win, and, like, we knew it was wrong, but we had to do it anyway. So, how can I have one answer to this question? Like, that's impossible. It's like Sophie's Choice over here.
Oh, that reminds me most of the Walking Dead Telltale games. Anyway, so that's the question of the week. What video game do you still get emotional about? So look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast or the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forums. Send your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net or at gamingpodcast.net itself. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. You know, I have not checked iTunes. I want to see if we have any new comments.
Ooh, you should probably do that before we record a show.
That's true. But like I said, we're getting...
Do our listeners get to post comments on each individual episode on iTunes?
No. They just talk about how great the episode is or what they like about it. It's a 4 or 5-star review. You know that.
Oh, so it's just on the whole...
They're just rating our podcast.
Not an episode.
You know,
okay.
And the more ratings we get, the higher Apple puts us on the seating and, you know, the more visibility we get. So that's why we want people to rate our podcast 5 stars and let everybody else see us. You know.
See, here's the problem, guys. If we don't feel appreciated, we're going to stop doing the show.
But you know what? We're getting more and more people joining every day now. And I don't know why it's starting to – it started at the beginning of the year, and it's sort of like we're getting more and more popular. You know, it's sort of
really?
Like – yes. We're getting more and more listeners.
I keep telling you.
You know, here's the thing. It's sort of like, here's an example. You know, Cheers, right? Cheers is a long-running show. But in 1982, it was dead last. Dead last on watched TV shows for that year. But Brandon...
And then they removed Shelley Duvall.
No, they didn't. No, this is the first season. Brandon Tartikoff said... I don't care how low the show, we're going to keep with it because it's quality writing, it's funny and all that stuff. And then they put it in a favorable spot, and then several years later, it's number one, you know. So,
ooh, and then let's not forget Frasier.
Well, Frasier.
The spinoff show.
Yeah, but Frasier never had to deal with a, you know, it got out of the gate running because A, it was a quality, B, it was a, you know, it was well-known characters, you know, Frasier was from Cheers. And I actually liked Frasier better, but... Cheers is more of my childhood because I watch it all the time.
But I'm sure there has to be writing staff crossover there.
But But here's the thing is that, you know, sometimes things, you know, take a while for people to start getting word of mouth.
Slow burn. It's called the slow burn.
And for whatever reason, we're starting to get more popular. And, you know, the thing is that this podcast has gone for 377 episodes for a reason, you know, and people probably see the number now and say, wait, they've done 377 episodes. Let's listen in and see what people are listening about, you know.
Hell yeah.
Either they're incredible.
I take sole responsibility. Thank you.
Okay. Technically, we've only me as a podcast host. I've only done 207 episodes for this. Oh no, actually, no. I started.
It depends on which podcast you're talking about. I think I joined around number 80.
No, I'm talking about this TD Gaming podcast. I entered in number 201. So, oh wow, I've done 176 episodes of TD Gaming podcast. Jeez.
Right, and I joined as episode 90, like 80 or so.
So you've done roughly 120 episodes of this.
Yeah, in video game roundtable, and then the two shows merged.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, well, the thing is, we've been doing this podcast for a long, you know, it's sort of like, we are sort of like the Frasier, you know, we've been going on almost as long, and we're going to be surpassing it as the original podcast. It's sort of like, you know.
Oh, it's like on Charmed when Rose McGowan was on the show longer than Shannon Doherty, but was still not as good of a sister or actress.
But we're better than, oh, I'm not going to say that. we're equally as good as Derek and Jennifer. And
we offer our unique points of view, which people also find entertaining.
We're still looking. I still want a third person, but we'll have to deal with guest hosting. A little teaser. Our guest host, who's next week, who should be next week, we'll see, because, you know, scheduling. He is one of the major podcasters. He's done really, really big podcasts for IGN, for other stuff. He actually currently has a new podcast, which, by the way, focuses on board games.
Ooh, board games.
Yes, and you know what? I'm toying with the idea of us having more discussions about board games since, you know what? This is the gaming podcast, so... But we'll see. We'll see.
What does the TD stand for again? The TD Gaming Podcast?
Tech Diversions. That was the name of a store that no longer exists.
Huh. Might we need some rebranding?
We already have rebranding. We're the VGRT Gaming Podcast.
Oh, yeah.
VGRT. They merged. Remember, they're one and the same now.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what? While this podcast may have run well over an hour, it doesn't feel like it.
No. We've had some fun. We've had some laughs. We've had some tears.
We've had some anger on your part.
A little song, a little dance, a little seltzer down your pants.
I thought it was Batman's head on the lance. That's from Batman 1989, you know?
Right, but Chuckles the Clown, Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Yeah, but that's what
I studied it in school.
That's what that's what the Joker was referencing.
Right. So I was going for the original and the classic, and you were going for the cheap fanboy moment. Mm. I think that says a lot about our personalities.
That's what it's all about,
Jonah.
Paul.
I think that says a lot about our personalities, Jonah. That's very telling.
Yeah.
I went for the classy move, and you went for the cheap shot.
Maybe we'll end this with the My Little Pony theme.
I don't think we can get the rights to that.
We don't need the rights. We're talking over it, so it's not a big deal. Anyways, we will see you next week, and hopefully next week we'll have the special guest host.
I wonder who it could be. Jonah never tells me anybody.
Well, that's because I don't like giving away spoilers for you.
Right, because then he'll know I'll mysteriously find something else to do during recording time.
Uh-huh. Anyway.
Oops, I can't make it. Sorry.
We'll see you next week.
Bye, Bonds. What? It's good advice.